alone, then you must be smarter than your enemy.
What are you trying to say?
The Americans, they're very smart, but sometimes they can be incredibly stupid. They spend all this money and time and energy on the so-called war on terror. They put satellites up in space. They can ram a smart bomb up a camel's ass from a situation room 5,000 miles away. But every time the U.S. kills an Al-Qaeda leader, what happens is a new one before the body's cold. You do it a million times. They never get it because the real solution always eludes them.
What is?
Do nothing.
Nothing.
Nada. If you want to shut down a fundamentally flawed system, all you gotta do is step out of its way, and it'll shut itself down. Nature has a way of correcting itself.
Yeah, there's $1 trillion worth of advice to the Pentagon for free. How about that? Yeah. Hey, it's the 29th of February, 2016. And we're in the bunker here, right here in North Central Indiana. And we're also at resist.com, P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Almost time to start scraping up some donations for the March shows. But that's all right. You got some time. Don't get excited. I'm not one of those guys always crying for money. It's too late for me to get a lot of money. Okay, well, let's see here. What's going on? Oh, I watched a little bit of the debate the other night. I never watched the whole thing. I get sick. I get literally almost sick at my stomach. How they lie and lie and turn it around and 180 degrees out of phase with yesterday what they said. They all do it. And so they're all goddamn liars. In fact, I put a big bulletin board. We're back on in business with my sign in front of my house. They're not going to keep me out of the sign business. Anyhow, I said, on the sign I put up this morning with big 4-inch letters, "None of the bastards." Of course, I hope some of these people here can understand what that means. I know all the church people will get all excited because I said bastards. I mean, that's the only kind of stuff that gets these people excited. If you say something that against Jesus or the church or something like that, or say what they consider a nasty word, there's nothing nasty about bastards because I can prove every one of these guys running for office and the girls too are bastards. Well, I see Gerald L.K. Smith's birthday was on the 27th. Now, Gerald K. Smith was a preacher, but he also was very much a pro-white guy. Yeah, so that's why he's on the list. So that's all for a few days here. Okay, now, today we're going to talk a little bit about Mary Bacon. And if you're new and or old and have a bad memory, Mary Bacon was a famous jockey, one of the first female jockeys that made it big time. She was a beautiful gal. She had posed for picture in Playboy, not nude. No, she had Levi's on. She's a beautiful woman. But she came to a bad end. I'm going to read to you about Mary Bacon today, but I'm going to add a little on that they don't talk about who really put the skids to Mary Bacon and ultimately led to her suicide in Texas. Mary Bacon's ashes were spread across Belmont Park, which shows you how much respect people had for her, one of the many tracks she had hoped to conquer. The race of Bacons that New Yorkers most remembered was 1973, when she went down in an ugly spill, was trampled by a horse, and suffered multiple injuries, including a crushed pelvis. Injuries such as that and a penchant for outlandish behavior, which the media lapped up and the racing establishment abhorred, kept Bacon from riding more than 300 winners in a career that began soon after the woman's movement and the courts pushed horsemen into giving female jockeys a chance in the late 60s. Bacon wasn't there on the front lines with Kathy Kuzner or Diane Crump and Barbara Jo Rubin, but she was the most visible of the platoon that came shortly thereafter. Bacon's off-track life, accompanied by the inevitable wisecrack, overshadowed her riding career. She was linked with the KKK. She posed in the buff for Playboy. Wrong. She made more money modeling than riding, and she had to throw away lines that sounded like Marilyn Monroe's when Hollywood was trying to make her a star. The difference was Bacon didn't have some studio flack writing her material. She was naturally funny. Unintentionally, she was the antithesis of what the serious female jockeys wanted in those gate-crashing days. Instead of being interviewed about riding skills, Bacon was being asked about her centerfold. For the record, Los Angeles Times, Saturday, June 22, 1991, home edition, sports, Part C, page 3, column 3, sports desk 1. 31 words type of material. Mary Bacon, a story in Friday's edition on the recent death of former jockey. Mary Bacon implied that she had posed nude for a picture in Playboy magazine. Bacon posed in a pair of jeans and the photo was shot from the rear. Last weekend, Bacon apparently shot herself in Fort Worth hotel room. She was 41 or 43 or perhaps some other age. The last race she won was last fall at Bandera Downs, a new track near San Antonio that has average crowds of 3,500. Don Ryan, a Bandera official, remembered the blonde, brash Bacon riding for his grandfather, when Ryan was a teenager hanging out at Churchill Downs. Quote, "This Bacon's death is hard to figure out," Ryan said Thursday. Quote, "We talked a lot when she was riding here last year. She didn't tell me that she had cancer. She was getting about 2 mounts a day and told me she planned to settle in Texas." Before Bandera, Bacon hadn't done any riding since another painful spill at Golden Gate Fields in 1982, an earlier accident at a track near St. Louis resulted in a lawsuit and $1 million judgment, but the track went out of business and Bacon never collected. The Golden Gate accident, worse than others, scrambled her mind besides punishing her body. She was unconscious for 11 days. And people who talked to her long afterwards noticed she was missing a familiar mental sharpness. Quote, she's broken 39 bones, unquote, her husband, jockey Jeff Anderson, said at the time. This is the first time she's broken her brain. Less than a year after the Golden Gate spill, against doctor's orders, Bacon went out to Bay Meadows and tried to gallop a horse. The saddle slipped and she hit the ground. Quote, "To say she's very depressed is an understatement," Anderson said. "I think she'll be all right once she gets back on the horses." For Bacon, horses was the ultimate escape. Quote, "Horses are a wall that I ride behind," she said. "Horses are more important to me than most people." An earlier husband, Johnny Bacon, was also a jockey. Racing officials had problems with both of them riding in the same race, but one day at Detroit Racecourse they were competing, and Johnny's horse slammed into Mary's, leaving the gate. Quote, "I was so mad that if he hadn't snatched up on his horse, I would have put him over the fence," Mary Bacon said. The stewards disqualified Johnny Bacon's horse and gave him a 5-day suspension. Quote, "That's nothing," Mary Bacon said. "I gave him 5 nights." Johnny Bacon was killed in an automobile accident several years later. Bacon wore flowered underwear, which showed through her white jockey pants. Quote, "When I'm on the lead," she said, "it gives the boys back there something to look at." In 1989, Bacon and her agent, also a woman, were involved in a bizarre kidnapping incident near Pocono Downs, Pennsylvania. 2 years later, one of the alleged kidnappers was found found with a gun in the bathroom of Bacon's hotel room in Louisville, Kentucky. He was arrested, convicted, and sentenced to a long jail term. All the way to her death, Mary Bacon didn't blend into the crowd. Horse racing notes. Lafitte Pinckney, who won the Valkyrie Handicap last year with a paper princess and rode Shy Wing to victory in the stakes in 85. That's the end of the main information on Mary Bacon. Mary Bacon was set with a very expensive contract with Revlon Cosmetics. She and her boyfriend were down there in Louisiana. Duke was having one of his get-togethers, sort of a rally. They happened to stumble into the crowd, and she said something that was pro-white. I don't know exactly how it went down, but Duke grabbed her and got her up on the stage. Now, this is the way Duke operates. He'll use anybody he can, just like he's trying to use Trump today, just to feather his own nest. Obviously, if he was really for Trump, he wouldn't be blowing it off that he was supporting him, because the press now are making more mincemeat out of him, and making Donald Trump have to make excuses for David Duke. Well, that's David Duke. So he got her up there, and then she was not thinking, and she lost her contract with Revlon, and from then on it was downhill. And I've always, that was at the time when I was working with David Duke, and I've always held that against him, that he destroyed Mary Bacon. And she never was the same after that. So anyhow, she was a brave girl, and she was a beautiful girl, and she was a great race jockey, and she was committed suicide at 43. Primarily because evidently she had cancer. I remember when she was being harassed on the tracks, and I got in touch with her down on the track there in San Diego. I heard she was running at Del Mar, so I called and talked to her, and I said, "I hear you're being harassed by some of the people because of your being exposed by David Duke." She said, "Yes, I am. I have been for a long time." I said, "Look, I'll send some men down there and run bodyguard duty for you." And she said, "No, don't do that. I don't need that." So we didn't do it, but we offered anyhow. But anyhow, if you're out there and you got any brains, you can see what David Duke is doing now and how he's now got Trump. I'm not saying about supporting Trump, because I'm not going to support him. But here he goes, Duke trying to hang on to his shirt tail and make it tougher for Trump. That's the way Duke has always been. But he seems to always seem to get a new group of suckers up to keep him in money and traveling around the world and all that kind of crap. That's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it. So if you're playing around with David Duke, don't play around with me.
When questioned, Republican frontrunner Donald Trump was hesitant to renounce support from former Ku Klux Klan leader David Duke and white supremacist groups who've made statements supportive of him. He said he wouldn't condemn people or groups he knew nothing about. Mayor Emanuel says Trump shouldn't have to do research to condemn people like Duke, but should do so on instinct.
His statements, or the lack of clarity around his statements, you sleep in the bed you make. And I think the playing with dark forces come back to haunt you. And this is not a joke.
The mayor spoke with reporters after casting an early ballot in the Illinois primary.
All I can say is, ha, 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 ha.
Hey, yo! Thank you, thank you, thank you! Woo! Man, I counted at least 15 black people on that montage. Hey! Well, I'm here at the Academy Awards, otherwise known as the White People's Choice Awards. You realize if they nominated hosts, I wouldn't even get this job. So y'all be watching Neil Patrick Harris right now. But here's the crazy thing. This is the wildest, craziest Oscars to ever host because we got all this controversy. No black nominees, you know? And people are like, Chris, you should boycott. Chris, you should quit. You should quit. You know, how come it's only unemployed people that tell you to quit something, huh? No one with a job ever tells you to quit. So I thought about quitting. I thought about it real hard. But I realized they're going to have the Oscars anyway. They're not going to cancel the Oscars because I quit. You know? And the last thing I need is to lose another job to Kevin Hart. Okay? I don't need that. Kev right there. Kev make movies fast. Every month. Porno stars don't make movies that fast. Now, the thing is, why are we protesting? That's the big question. Why this Oscars? Why this Oscars? You know, it's the 88th Academy Awards. The 88th Academy Awards. Which means this whole no black nominees thing has happened at least 71 other times. Okay? You gotta figure that it happened in the 50s, in the 60s. You know, in the 60s, one of those years, Sydney didn't put out a movie. I'm sure there were no black nominees some of those years, say 62 or 63. And black people did not protest. Why? Because we had real things to protest at the time. You know? We had real things to protest. You know, it's too busy being raped and lynched to care about who won Best Cinematographer. You know, when your grandmother's swinging from a tree, it's really hard to care about Best Documentary, Foreign Short. But what happened this year? What happened? People went mad, you know? Spike got mad, and Charlton got mad, and Jada went mad, and Will went mad. Everybody went mad, you know? It's quite like Jada got mad. Jada says she's not coming. Protesting. I'm like, is she on a TV show? Jada's going to boycott the Oscars. Jada boycotting the Oscars is like me boycotting Rihanna's panties. I wasn't invited. Not an invitation I would turn down. But I understand. I'm not hating. I understand you're mad. Jada's mad. Her man, Will, was not nominated for concussion. I get it. Tell you the truth. I get it. You get mad. So that it's not fair that Will was this good and didn't get nominated. Yeah, you're right. It's also not fair that Will was paid $20 million for Wild Wild West. Okay? Okay? Things, you know, this year the Oscars, things are going to be a little different. Things are going to be a little different at the Oscars. This year, in the in memoriam package, it's just going to be black people that were shot by the cops on their way to the movie. Yes, I said it, all right? Hey, if you want black nominees every year, you need to just have black categories. That's what you need. You need to have black categories. You already do it with men and women. Think about it. There's no real reason for there to be a man in a woman category in acting. It's not, come on. There's no reason. It's not track and field. You don't have to separate them. You know, Robert De Niro's never said, I better slow this acting down so Meryl Streep could catch up. No. Not at all, man. If you want black people every year at the Oscars, just have black categories like best black friend. That's right. And the winner for the 18th year in a row is Wanda Sykes. This is Wanda's 18th black Oscar. But here's the real question. The real question everybody wants to know, everybody wants to know in the world, is Hollywood racist? Is Hollywood racist? You know, that's a, you know, you got to go at that the right way. Is it Vernon Cross racist? No. Is it Benton and some Lemonade racist? No. It's a different type of racist. Now, I remember one night I was at a fundraiser for President Obama. A lot of you were there. And, you know, it's me and all of Hollywood. And all the, you know, it's all of us there. And there's about four black people there. Me, Quincy Jones, Russell Simmons, Questlove. You know, the usual suspects, right? and every black actor that wasn't working. Needless to say, Kev Hart was not there, okay? So at some point, you get to take a picture with the president, you know, and as they're setting up the picture, you get like a little moment with the president. I'm like, Mr. President, you see all these writers and producers and actors? They don't hire black people. And they're the nicest white people on earth. They're liberals. Cheese. That's right. Is Hollywood racist? You're damn right Hollywood's racist. But it ain't the racist that you've grown accustomed to. Hollywood is sorority racist. It's like, we like you, Rhonda, but you're not a Kappa. That's how Hollywood is. But things are changing. Things are changing. Yeah, we got a Black Rocky this year. Yeah, some people call it Creed. I call it Black Rocky. And that's an unbelievable statement. I mean, because Rocky takes place in a world where white athletes are as good as black athletes. So Rocky's a science fiction movie. There's things that happen in Star Wars that are more believable than things that happen in Rocky, okay? But hey, we're here to honor actors. We're here to honor actors. We're here to honor film, you know. And there's a lot of snubs. But one of the biggest snubs no one's talking about. My favorite actor in the world is Paul Giamatti. Paul Giamatti, I believe, is the greatest actor in the world. Think about what Paul Giamatti has done the last couple of years. Last year, he's in 12 Years a Slave, hates black people. This year, he's in Straight Outta Compton, loves black people. Last year, he's whooping Lupita. This year, he's crying at Eazy-E's funeral. Now, that's range. Yeah, Ben Affleck can't do that. But what I'm trying to say is, you know, it's not about boycott or anything. It's just we want opportunity. We want the black actors to get the same opportunities as white actors. That's it, you know? Not just once. You know, Leo gets a great part every year. And everybody, all you guys get great parts all the time. But what about the black actors? Look at Jamie Foxx. Jamie Foxx is one of the best actors in the world, man. Jamie Foxx, yeah. Jamie Foxx was so good in Ray that they went to the hospital and unplugged the real Ray Charles. It's like, we don't need two of these. No, man. But the big thing, you know, is everything's not about race, man. Another big thing tonight is you're not allowed, somebody told me this, you're not allowed to ask women what they're wearing anymore. It's the whole thing, you know, ask her more. You have to ask her more. Now, you know, it's like, you ask the men more. Everything's not sexism. Everything's not racism. They ask the men more because the men are all wearing the same outfits, okay? every guy in here is wearing the exact same thing. You know, if George Clooney showed up with a lime green tux on and a swan coming out his ass, somebody would go, "What you wearing, George?" Hey, welcome to the 88th Oscar Academy Awards.
Why did I play that for you? Well, if you'd have seen the audience and seen the looks on their faces and how they had these polite smiles and polite clapping and all that with Chris Rock's, he made them nervous. The whole place was full of whites and white Jews. And they play the game. They really play the game. And they can't, oh man, to be a racial separatist in Hollywood would be a real tough job. If you get a chance to see that intro, and he shoves the shit right in their faces and they lick it up, you know, and then they pretend they're all thrilled and laughing. But when you look at the looks on their face, that's not what they're looking like. Yeah, so anyhow, nothing's going to change. And I do agree they should have black categories. But when they do, they keep the blacks out of the white movies. Yeah, because I don't want to see blacks in the movies. I mean, you know, I just like whites. I mean, I like whites in white movies. The blacks may do a great job in a black movie, but that, I'm not really interested. Come on, give me a break. I spend my $7 as a senior citizen. I want to see white people. Recently, a Catholic priest based in Northern Ireland, caught on camera snorting cocaine in a room filled with Nazi memorabilia. Father Stephen Crossman, 37, was seen using a 14-pound note to inhale the illicit substance during a party at his house located on church grounds after a night of drinking. Hail Jesus! Quote, "I shouldn't before snorting the white powder." Wait a minute. "I shouldn't before snorting the white powder off a plate while talking to a friend," the vicar of Christ could be heard saying in the video. After the tape was made public, Croissant admitted to the affair but maintained he did not have a problem with substance abuse. Quote, "It was just one night and that was it. I do not have an issue with drugs," Croson told journalists. If you believe that, you'll believe anything. As for the Nazi paraphernalia adorning the priest's apartment, one source who spoke with the British-based tabloid said they were shocked at the display. Quote, "The house was lovely, but we were stunned to see the Nazi stuff. It was all over the house. At one point, Stephen put on a cap and did a Nazi salute. It's shocking. He's supposed to be an upstanding member of society." The source said that the footage was shot at the end of a two-day bender, after which the priest invited a group of people back to his home. When asked about the Nazi decor gracing his parish apartment, he said, quote, "I'm no Nazi. I collect historical stuff. There's stuff there from every country." Well, I guess George Lincoln Rockwell wasn't a Nazi either. He just collected historical stuff. I love it. I love it. Hypocrisy is the national sport, international sport. You know, I don't like hypocrites, no matter who they are. And Bernie Sanders now has become a hypocrite, too. Headed towards victory in New Hampshire, pundits noted the barrier he was about to break. Sanders would become the first Jewish candidate to win a major party presidential primary. But since that February 9th win, instead of bursting the burst of communal pride that often accompanies such milestones, the response from American Jews has been muted. One reason, the Vermont senator, the candidate who has become closer than any other Jew to becoming a Democratic or Republican presidential nominee, has mostly avoided the discussion of his Judaism. Sanders has baffled Jews by refusing to name the Israeli kibbutz where he briefly volunteered in the 60s. sending reporters scrambling to solve the mystery. When they found the kibbutz, he wouldn't comment. In New Hampshire, after his breakout win, he described himself as the son of a Polish immigrant, unquote, not a Jewish Polish immigrant. At a Democratic debate, he spoke of the historic nature of somebody with my background seeking the presidency, but didn't use the word Jewish. A recent headline in the liberal Jewish Daily Forward newspaper read, quote, "We need to out Bernie Sanders as a Jew for his own good." He loves that. Rabbi James Glazer of the Temple Sinai in South Burlington, Vermont, said Sanders' comments were being discussed by rabbis in the liberal reform movement. Quote, "What did he leave out there? He didn't say Jewish Polish immigrant. Reform rabbis have picked up on that big one." Sanders' lack of religious observance is not what rankles. It has become so common for Jews to identify culturally instead of religiously with the faith that the Pew Research Center, in its most recent study of the American Jewish population, used a category called Jews of No Religion. Well, as far as I'm concerned, if they're Jews of no religion, they're not Jews. If you're a Baptist with no religion, you're not a Baptist. Michael Bloomberg, the former New York mayor, also is not religious, but he was embraced for his unwavering support of Israel and his generous donations to Jewish circle causes. Louis Brandeis, who in 1916 became the first Jewish justice on the U.S. Supreme Court, did not practice his faith, yet he was the pride of the American Jews. Brandeis went on to become a leading U.S. advocate for Zionism. See, that whole package, it's a whole ball of wax. But Sanders, during more than three decades in public life as a mayor, congressman, and U.S. senator, has developed few relationships with Jewish groups or leaders. On religious issues or on Israel, he has supported a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and has not made Israel in any way a priority. Quote, "I would say that he has never been one of those in Congress who was active in Jewish caucus, who turned out for Israel, who was involved in those issues, and still isn't," said Jonathan Sarna, an expert in Jewish history at Brandeis University. Ironically, when Sanders gave his most religiously focused campaign speech, he only seemed to underscore his distance from Judaism. It was last fall at Liberty University, the evangelical school founded by Reverend Jerry Falwell at Lynchburg, and that's the most hypocritical school in the country, that he addressed the school on Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, one of the most important holidays of the year to the Kikaroos. Discussing his beliefs in the speech, he said he was motivated by a vision for social justice, which exists in all the great religions. But Sanders didn't say he was Jewish. Later, he did stop in at a Rosh Hashanah gathering in the home of a Lynchburg mayor. The Sanders campaign did not respond to repeated requests for comment for this article. Wow, so there you go. Everybody likes to be a hypocrite. Everybody likes to be a hypocrite. But let's see now, if somebody who you think is a Jew, if he's not a Zionist, if he's not pro-Israel, he's not into Judaism, and he works a regular job, what is he? Well, I don't think he's a Jew myself, because you can't categorize most Jews as a race. There are segments of the Jews who have certain ethnic fringe racial appearances and so forth, but to say that a Jew cannot quit being a Jew, I don't think that's fair. But anyhow, most of the problem with Jews that you see is their affinity with their racial looks show that they're not Aryan, that's for sure, you know. But most Hollywood Nazis, in many cases, could not tell a Jew from a Baptist. They can't. In fact, in Christian Identity, when I used to be involved, I used to see people of the Christian Identity gatherings who looked like this Jewish thing to me, and even tar brush, and even William Gale used to talk about being part Indian or something. He was dark, that's for sure. So there's a lot of hypocrisy on this race issue. We got to get the story straight, man. Just the facts, man. Just the facts. But remember, there's more white Aryans and pseudo-Christians and so forth supporting Israel than Jews. If you, I'll bet you anything. It's true. Oh, you want to gas them all them too? Yeah. Well, the Christians are not going to gas them till Jesus comes back. I don't know whether he's going to gas them or knife them or guillotine them or what, but if they don't switch over to the Jesus cult, they're all going to be killed according to the Bible.
Today we had a shooting at the Madison High School. We had what we believe was one individual enter into the school and begin firing a weapon at other students in the lunchroom. There were four students injured. We believe two of them were injured with gunshot and two of them with some other type of shrapnel or just an injury of trying to get out of the way. The shooter then fled. The shooter's been taken into custody. The four, I will not be able to release names of anybody, but the four children involved, their families have all been contacted. They've either been transported out or flown out. And we still have an active scene. Obviously, we have detectives at the scene doing the follow-up investigation and interviewing the multitude of students that were on scene at the time. I'm sorry I won't be able to answer any other questions for you at this time, but I wanted to give you an update as to what's going on right now. Thank you.
I'm not sure whether that was Madison High School, Madison, Ohio or not, but it was Madison High School over in Ohio. Shoot up today, the 29th. I'm telling you, these kids just hate these schools. They don't like their education.
It's been in my country, there is a problem. In my country, there is a problem, and that problem is transport. It takes very, very long because cars are coming big. Throw transport down the well.
Come on.
So my country can be free. So my country can be free. We must make travel easy. Then we have a big party. In my country there is a problem, and that problem is the Jews. They take everybody's money. They never give it.
Throw the
surprise guest stop over at Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern last night, Baron Cohen. Yeah, Baron Cohen, direct from Kazakhstan, singing Throw the Jew Down the Well. How about that? You might have heard that before. It's been out a while, but it was really neat to have him live in our studio and our tavern. You're in my tavern. Too bad you couldn't have been here. You know, the neatest trick I like to play is that if we had every person that's racially oriented, white racially oriented, immediately change their registration to Democrat and reinvade the Democrat Party. You got to remember, the Democrat Party was the basis for all the racist activity and the Ku Klux Klan and all the segregation in the South. And if we had enough whites just to go in there and jump in the Democrat Party, fuck the Republicans, I think we could take it over. Make a deal with the black separatists, too. How about that? One of those screwy statements by Rubio, our little Cuban boy. Quote, we are clearly called in the Bible to adhere to our civil authorities. But that conflicts with also our requirements to adhere to God's rules, especially the Jew God. So when those two come in conflict, God rules and always wins. Unquote. Well, I'm waiting for God to come down here and explain all that shit, man. He's been pretty quiet for a long time.
In 1941, during the trial of labor leader Harry Bridges, Seldes wrote a series of articles on the FBI. He documented its infiltration of labor unions, its keeping of dossiers, and its use of provocateurs to undermine labor and political organizations. In response, Seldes received a 15-page letter from the Bureau's director. It was the beginning of a lively correspondence between the two men.
Dear Mr. Seldes, the FBI is a fact-finding organization which has for its objective the preservation and protection of civil liberties. The FBI does not perform anti-labor espionage. No citizen has been harassed or intimidated by any special agent of the FBI or by me. The activities of the FBI have always been open and above board. I shall observe with interest the action you take since you have been advised of the facts. Very truly yours, John Edgar Hoover.
Seldes stood by his story, but he soon discovered that Hoover was indeed observing his work with interest.
The commandant of the U.S. recruiting station at a town called Marfa, Texas. I never heard of it before or after, but apparently it was a recruiting town. Wrote me saying that an agent of the FBI has arrived and he's taking names of every soldier who subscribes to In Fact. And I didn't know how true that was.
Dear Mr. Seldes, I have been employed at Fort Mammoth. Last week, I was called suddenly to the Office of Intelligence. What follows is a portion of the investigation. Question, what do you know about a publication called In Fact? The following Thursday, I was dismissed from government service.
Dear Mr. Seldes, you might be interested in this from Coast Guard Intelligence. Investigator, have you any affiliation with the Communist Party? I replied, no, sir. Why do you ask? Investigator, that copy of In Fact. He confiscated my notes for a book I'm writing. He also took the copy of In Fact.
Every time I wrote to Hoover, he wrote me a denial, said that such a thing is impossible and can't happen in this republic, and it's not true.
Then one day, Seldes received a piece of mail that seemed to settle the issue.
I think it was just an error. She saw my name and address in there and put it in and wrote it on the envelope and sent me the letter instead of sending it to the FBI. But it was mailed to me and I had the evidence. It's a letter from the assistant postmaster in South Norwalk addressed to the FBI agent in charge, New Haven, Connecticut. And all it says was that the following pieces of mail have been received today. And so there were no Xeroxing those days. I had to have a photograph made of this letter, and I made the photograph and sent it to J. Edgar Hoover, and I never heard from him again.
People called or they wrote to cancel their subscription that they were afraid to have a subscription. We went from 176,000 down probably about 40,000 in the space of, months or a year.
The cold witch hunt of today attempts to make the nation reactionary in a legal manner. It has already frightened many who believe in the Constitution of the United States.
You're ruled except if you...
I think McCarthy and what he stood for and what was happening in America had an effect on George that was much, much deeper and important than just the fact that it hurt his subscribers list and finally killed, in fact, I think we have to say. I think what mattered to him is that it was happening in America.
History with variations is repeating here what I saw happening in Italy, in Germany. Red baiting, anti-labor violences, hoodlums of the American Legion breaking up meetings are small manifestations, but nevertheless important, significant dangers. The reactionaries are in power, in the press, in politics, everywhere. The voices against reaction are few and small. You must do something.
Once the most popular newsletter of the left, in fact, had been abandoned by communists, by fearful progressives, by liberals. In October 1950, after 10 years of press criticism and reporting, Seldes published his final issue.
I think it was very sad for him. It took away his professional reason for being alive, and it took away his voice with which he communicated with people. He was a publisher, and to be a newspaper publisher and then simply not to be is a very hard thing to do. You're plugged into this circuit which is pounding away all the time, and then somebody pulls the plug and the life goes out of you.
Apathy is the curse of civilization.
Personally, and there are a lot of people who might disagree with me, but I believe the whole anti-communist and the witch hunt on the communist was part of a ruling class program just to consolidate power under the predatory capitalists and so forth. And I think that no more of the communists that were around, they weren't that big a threat. But the ruling class and all their positions were making them sort of a threat. And so since I was in the right wing and right in the middle of that anti-communist thing for a long time, finally in my old age, I'm beginning to look back and reanalyze the situation. And I think for the most part, we were all taken for a ride. Boy, that'll give the right wing some more ammunition. Well, here's another bunch of crap. Yeah. The antithesis of nearly every Holocaust movie ever made, the Hungarian film Son of Saul is slim on happy endings. Directed by Laszlo Nemes, it tells the story of a member of the Sonderkommando, that's the Jews who ushered their co-religionists, off the trains into the showers, and who, after gassings, cleared those showers out to ready them for the next batch of victims. And you know that's impossible. You know they couldn't have gone in there after they killed a bunch of them and got back into that residue of the gas and so forth. They could not possible. But anyhow, I'll go on. Saul, portrayed Giza Rohrig, is shaken out of his numbness and despair by the body of a child who survives the gassing. And suddenly, amid the true-life rebellion of the Sonderkommando in October 1944, engages in his own form of resistance. with a camera that rarely takes its lens off of Rohrig's face, Son of Saul won the Grand Prix at the Cannes Film Festival this year, and is Hungary's entry for the Oscars. Rohrig, a poet, would-be rabbi and former kindergarten teacher, speaks with Vox Tablet's Sarah Ivory about the responsibility of carrying the story in his eyes, about why he returned to acting after decades of a long hiatus for this particular project, and how he found God on his own visit at age 19 to Auschwitz. I don't understand for the life of me why the Jews can't just say that there were a lot of Jews died, maybe hundreds of thousands of Jews died. Why they have to lie so much? They wouldn't have to lie to get the sympathy. They exaggerate so madly. I mean, you know, 6 million, you know, why not just say what it was, a few hundred thousand Jews? Why go to such extremes? But they always do, in every age, in every time historically. Just look at the Old Testament and read all that bullshit. I mean, you know, they're killing thousands and thousands of people, and they're winning big wars, and they're rising from the dead, and they're doing all kinds of shit. Well, that's the way the Jews exaggerate. That's what gets them in trouble. Leadership of the Jews are such big-ass liars. That's what gets them in trouble every time. But I do want to see that picture, that movie, when it comes around. I love to check out these things and check the exaggerations out. You can't have a room that's been used full of Zyklon B and just killed a bunch of people and then go in there immediately and start cleaning it out. That ain't going to work. That ain't going to work. In fact, the rooms they showed originally, I think after the war, they weren't sealed rooms. I mean, that Zyklon B could go all over the place. Keep an eye open for a children's book called The Tree in the Courtyard. This writer says, the other day I received a copy of The Tree in the Courtyard, a new children's book by Jeff Gutsfeld. It has gorgeous, detailed sepia drawings by Peter McCarty and tells the tale of the chestnut tree upon which Anne Frank gazed before she was taken away and murdered in World War II. Nearly anthropomorphized, the tree knows Anne is hiding in the annex. When Anne kisses a boy at the window, the tree blooms extra exquisitely just for her. It bears witness to the war and to Anne's fate. And decades later, when the tree is struck by lightning, its salvaged seeds and saplings go around the world as memorials to the Holocaust's most iconic victim. And on it goes. So you might want to keep that out of your kids' hands, because more Jewish stuff, caca. Well, that's about it for today. Moon's Day. Yeah. I'll be back with you tomorrow on Tears Day. No, I don't think I will be. I've got to go someplace tomorrow, so you may get an archive show tomorrow, but you'll get a show. 14-5.